All right, welcome to another episode of Piecing It Together, the podcast where we take a look at a new movie and try to figure out what movies inspired it. And today on the show, it's a very special episode. It's the live episode we just did that I've been promoting for the last couple of weeks. We did it in Glendale, California at the Look Dine-In Cinema. It was sponsored by Cinema Week, and we had an amazing lineup of guests. We had Raul Nevado and Colby Mack from Minorities Report and Rosa Parra from Latinx Lens, and it was such a fun time. We watched the movie, See How They Run, with a nice crowd of people who all came out for a free screening, and then we talked in front of them and had a great conversation, lots of great puzzle pieces, got into a lot of what we liked about the movie, some of the things that don't work about the movie, everything about the movie. You know, we do what we do here on the show, and we had a really great time. Thank you to these awesome guests. Thank you to everyone who put this thing together and to everyone who showed up for the screening. So that is coming up here in a second. Before we get to it, I want to make sure that you know we are on all the major podcast apps. So wherever you're listening, make sure you're subscribed. Follow us on social media at Piecing Pod. Join in on the conversation in our Facebook group, Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces, where we continue the conversation about all the movies we talk about here on the show. And other than that, I just want to thank you all for listening, for making the show continue to happen. And let's talk about See How They Run. I'm David Rosen, the host of Piecing It Together podcast. I've got with me, I want to introduce my guests first because I'm just so happy to have this lineup of guests. So let's just go left to right here. We got Rosa Parra from Latinx Lens. Rosa, thank you so much for being here.
No problem. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Absolutely. This is exciting. You know, I'm going to ask each of you before we, because I'm going to explain the show to you guys, because most of you have never heard the show before, but we're going to talk about the film's possible influences, inspirations. Before we get to it, though, Rosa, what do you think about the movie?
I actually enjoyed it.
Yeah?
Yeah. I had a good time with it. I was very much entertained by the characters, the dynamic duo of Sam Rockwell and Saoirse Ronan was pretty fun to watch. But yeah, overall, I had a good time.
Awesome. Yeah, awesome. Yeah. Well, next up is Raul Nevado from Minorities Report. Raul, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. This is great.
Absolutely. What do you think of the movie?
You know, I feel like the second time I enjoyed it a lot more. This happened to be my second viewing. I think the first half is stronger than the second half. But I think overall, I think the movie is just a lot of fun, great laughs. And for some reason, knowing that the laughs are coming made them funnier to me.
I agree.
The second time. Yeah.
I saw it earlier this week, too, with like one other person in the theater, and it did not play as well as tonight.
Yeah.
So,
I agree.
Yeah, it's definitely great to see it with a crowd for sure. So, Colby Mack is our third guest, also from Minorities Report. Colby, how's it going, man?
Yo, what up?
So happy to have you here. What'd you think of the movie?
Yeah, so this is like the 27th film in my top 10.
I thought you were going to say the 27th time you saw it.
No, it's not the 27th time I've seen it, but like my top 10 has gotten bigger. It's somewhere like in the high 20s. I'm one over again. Like Saoirse Ronan doesn't miss Sam Rockwell. I swear, I feel like there was a part of his career that was just like, and this last, like, I don't know, 10 years, I'm like, this guy's actually really good.
It's post-Oscar is what it is.
It's got to be, you know? Right? Like, everything since Three Billboards, I'm just like,
Yeah.
I get it now, right?
Yeah.
No, this movie's fun. And it's a commentary on the genre without having to lean too much into being a spoof movie.
Sure.
While at the same time, being a movie that can stand on its own while still poking holes at itself.
Sure.
Right?
Absolutely.
There's a lot of layers to it.
Absolutely. You know?
So it's definitely, it's an onion. I'm not going to call it a glass one.
Oh. Speaking of which, okay. Way to go. I love it. So again, this show, Piecing It Together, it's about what movies inspired other movies. When a whodunit movie comes out in 2022, it's hard not to think about Knives Out. I'm sure some of you in the audience might think, I bet they're going to bring up Knives Out as a movie that might have inspired this. I'm taking it off the table in order to explain the show to you guys. So no Knives Out for our puzzle pieces here, but certainly, I think when you get a star-studded cast like this, a movie that's so knowingly playing with the format of a whodunit, of a murder mystery, that's got to come to mind, I think. So
absolutely, we've got Glass Onion coming later this year. I'm sure some of the puzzle pieces we talk about today might apply to that movie as well when it comes out. But I think most people love Knives Out. And I think people that watch these movies really love them. I mean, it's such a fun genre because you get together so many different people, so many actors. You get like a fun little mystery that keeps you guessing from beginning to end. And this is squarely in that. Like Colby was saying, it kind of veers towards parody in a way, but at the same time, it stands on its own. It is just another murder mystery of this particular modern era. But with that said, let's start getting into some puzzle pieces. Rosa, let's start with you. What do you have for your first one?
Yeah, so my first puzzle piece is Knives Out. No, I think that the first thing that came to me, especially in the third act, was Clue from 1985. It was just like so many similar shots, and having all the suspects in the same mansion and having all these shots with everybody standing there. And it's just like an homage to that film, and I couldn't help but I actually rewatched Clue today just to make sure I was gonna put it in my thing. And I even saw some resemblances in terms of even the visually, some of the characters were like visually dressed kind of similar to the cast of Clue. And that's my first puzzle piece, Clue, because I mean, it's cool.
Yeah, it 100% belongs in here. Yeah. But everything Agatha Christie and everything murder mystery and whodunit and all of it is the blueprint kind of in a way. And they even have the joke earlier in the movie where they say about you know, maybe it's all of them, you know, which you know, callback there. Yeah. But there's a lot of Clue in here. You guys fans of Clue over there?
How can you not be? John Landis wrote one of the funniest scripts ever.
Sure.
Yeah. Like it's great, and I feel like there's little Easter eggs, especially in the first act where it's like, oh, we clearly see deliberate shots of a letter opener, a wrench. You know, like I'm surprised like nobody saw like there wasn't like a club. Like, what's the classic weapons that are inside a clue?
Candlestick.
I didn't see a candlestick, right?
Yeah.
Like it should have been really blatant. Like, I guess like oh my goodness, David Oyelowo's, I guess, nephew is what we'll call him.
Sure.
Like, I could have swore, like, oh, he's a candle maker. And, like, I don't know, whatever, like, asinine thing they're going to give him.
Yeah.
But, like, yeah, like, it's so much Clue, like, riddled throughout of it. It would have been great if there was, like, a photo somewhere of, like, Tim Curry, you know?
Yeah.
That would have been nice.
I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, there's plenty of classic Hollywood in there, but, like, I wouldn't be surprised if it's in there somewhere on our third or fourth viewing. Mm-hmm. You catch, like, even more of those kind of things in there. So, for sure.
I got to say, I've never seen Clue.
Okay. I haven't seen it in many, many years. I was actually thinking about revisiting it for this particular episode, but I'll revisit it for Glass Onion or one of the many other, you know, ones of these movies that are on the way.
I'm sure it's on the list to be remade in like 2 years.
So. Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah, it's coming. It's coming.
Well, Raul, what do you have for your first one?
Yeah, so my first puzzle piece has a lot to do with the style of the film, and that is Jojo Rabbit. Okay. I feel like Jojo Rabbit, this film reminds me so much, the dialogue, the way the banter happens, the way the conversation happens between characters, and also the way they're taking these dark subjects and twisting them into being comedic. And then on top of that, like you said, a spoof. It's a parody.
Yeah.
Jojo Rabbit very much feels like a spoof of the Holocaust, which is just crazy, but somehow he made it work, and it's incredible, and it's hilarious. And of course, I can't, like, every time I think of it, it makes me laugh. And that is the whole, like, constable, inspector, commissioner. It makes me think of the scene in Jojo Rabbit when they're like, Hell Hitler? And it's just like, you got all these people in the room. They all have to do it. And it is hilarious. It's hilarious in this film. It's hilarious in Jojo Rabbit. And I just, all the way, I was thinking Jojo Rabbit in this movie.
That's cool. I like that. Yeah, that one of my upcoming pieces kind of goes back to that same kind of a vibe. So I completely see where you're coming from with that. And yeah, that whole commissioner, inspector, that stuff, that's some of the funniest stuff in the movie,
is.
I think. They deliver it so well.
And they do it more than once and it works.
Yeah.
Every time.
Every time. It's a great callback.
I think that this film really understands like the formula to what makes a good comedic movie work, right? Like it is formula. It is a simple science and like in the rules of three and how you'd be able to do it. So they don't overplay the joke, which is great. Like it's super smart and it's very aware of what it's trying to do. And I think aesthetically, like what you're pointing to, like with Jojo Rabbit, it's weird. you almost expect this film, because it's made in 2022, to have this gloss to it. Mm. And they made sure to be able to shoot on film, which it looks like. And it's very grainy, specific, because this movie is about being in the 1950s. And the fact that, you know, you have Jojo Rabbit taking place during the world, you know, the World War and stuff like that. It's just, it's really interesting that they were able to kind of keep that. So, great piece.
Yeah, absolutely.
You got some record.
Yeah, absolutely. Kobe, what do you got first?
Oh, man, I actually have a 2022 film that, granted, could this have inspired it? No, but it's Agatha Christie, and it has like this huge ensemble cast. Mm-hmm. It has one of like the greatest detectives of all time, and Hercule Poirot in Death on the Nile.
Yeah.
Like I said, while I didn't say Murder on the Orient Express, it's that Death on the Nile.
Yeah,
I could have, right? It's a story that moves, and we still have this whodunit story that, while you thought it could have been constricted, kind of like with Clue, in the one setting, you could have had the entire mystery and film unfold at the theater in that one night, right?
Yeah.
Which does kind of raise the stakes, because it makes what you were speaking of, not every, like, you know, we don't know who could be the suspect, but everybody could be a victim. You almost expect there to be more bodies to fall, but with Death on the Nile, you kind of still have the story progressing as they're going on this trip, and slowly everything's kind of uncovering. And it's cool to hear, it's very blatant that you see all of the mysteries to everybody. Everybody has a reason to be the killer. Everybody justifiably hates the person that we're all supposed to hate, which is great. I mean, so shout out to like Adrian Brody for like being just a despicable, you know, New Yorker, right? I'm the opposite. I'm the charismatic asshole New Yorker. So, you know, it was nice to kind of have that juxtaposition. But like specifically with Hercule Poirot's character and Sam Rockwell's character, kind of like what was pointed to in the beginning of the first act, you have our protagonist that is offbeat, a bit aloof, but that's what makes him really great at his job. Because he has this disconnect to people, he pays amazing attention to detail. And the way that he reads people is just so fun, because we don't get a chance to see people. I'll tell you right now, if cops today were more like, you know, Stop Hard, what a name, right? Or like Hercule Poirot, I think that law enforcement would be a lot more respected and a bit more cooler. Or if they just have less creepy mustaches and more inventive and cool mustache.
Yeah. The cool mustaches could go a long way.
I've been trying. It just doesn't work. It gets stuck on the side and does nothing up top. So.
Well, what you got going on? It's working.
Oh, though. It's pretty glorious.
Yeah. Love it, though. I mean, again, those speaking, you know, back to Knives Out, I mean, we're in this. It's not a golden era, because the golden era was back in the day, but we're in this total renaissance right now of like new ones that include both of those Hercules ones, but then Knives Out, this, you know, I would even say like not really a whodunit, but like a really good companion piece, like a double feature with this, Confess Fletch, which came out last week, which is great. But
I swear,
like these comedy mystery type things, you know,
I had no idea what it was. And it came out of nowhere, because, of course, no streamer knows how to properly market a movie at all. Yeah. Right? Shout out to why we need to watch movies in the theaters, because at least they do a good job of getting us there.
Yeah.
I had no idea, like, oh, there's this movie that I heard. It's like, it's pretty fun. So I'll get to it. Not tonight. Maybe tomorrow. I'll figure it out.
Highly recommended.
Yeah.
I'll move on to my first piece, which is the first one that came to mind for me because of all of the meta elements, including Agatha Christie actually being a character and all that, and all of the characters being so well versed, in fact, in whodunits and murder mysteries that they're actually starring in one, a lot of the characters. Yeah. I'm going with Wes Craven's New Nightmare, which may seem a little out of left field, but I mean, you know, the characters are on the set of a new
Nightmare
on Elm Street movie. Yeah, movie within a movie, and they're all so well aware of what that could mean, what could happen in that kind of movie, and that's going to possibly happen to them now. And then, like I said, you eventually get Wes Craven involved in the action. You get, you know, Agatha Christie here. There's so many layers of all that. Whodunits in the movie, the eventual, you know, of course, spoiler alert for anyone listening at home that didn't just sit and watch the movie, but the eventual reveal of who the killer was, you know, it was actually based on his story. And so it's like another layer of meta on top of meta on top of meta. And New Nightmare is like one of the best when it comes to like just really taking something that we all know and love and just throwing a layer underneath it and a layer underneath it and just keeping on going like that.
It's definitely one of the greatest horror movie reinventions, with probably one of the poorest reinventions of a character design.
Fair enough. It was a growing pains moment.
It was. But I mean, you got to shout out like that. That's an excellent piece. I would not have thought about it, but the meta-ness like you're talking about is so apparent. Like it's crazy. Like I feel like, you know, with Dennis in this film ends up, and it's funny because like, you know, Cop and whatever, Adrian Brody says like, you know, oh, we're going to make the villain like be, who does that? Like it goes against convention, but it's also worked for what it's trying to do. And it's like, he didn't know who Agatha Christie was. And I feel like there was this air of mystery to who she is. I had no idea what Agatha Christie looks like.
Sure.
And I swear, since I was a child, I thought that Agatha Christie was Angela Lansbury. Probably until like 2010, I had no idea that that was not the same person.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, that's the one who did Murder, She Wrote. She wrote all the movies too.
Sure.
And it's Angela Lansbury because she's been around forever. Right?
Yeah.
So but I realized I was wrong.
Yeah. That's a good characterization though of that same kind of old woman.
Do you know who that actress was in the movie?
No.
Think about it, Harry Potter fans.
It's Moaning Myrtle.
Agatha Christie.
That was great. I like that. She was great.
Her voice was fantastic.
Yeah.
It just brought all the nostalgia back. Yes. It's wonderful to hear it.
Who doesn't love old ladies like that?
And she was also like a little bit inappropriate.
Yeah.
Which is great. Just sure. Like Moaning Myrtle. She's a lot inappropriate.
Rosa, let's go to your next piece.
Yeah, so my next piece, it might come a little bit out of left field because when I was watching it, I was just thinking about this movie. And it's actually my favorite Martin Scorsese film. It's 2011's Hugo. I was just thinking about, like, historically speaking, like, aesthetically, it was very reminiscent of what we were watching here. And granted, different location, London and Paris, 20 years prior, Hugo takes place, but it does involve movies. Granted, not the an exploration of the dynamics of filmmaking in terms of directors, screenwriters, and so on, but it does involve filmmaking and the beginning of cinema and how that has evolved and just recollecting all these movies, the first movies ever made and how it's all evolved to literally just sitting here and talking about what we're talking about right now. So so Hugo 2011, it was and I went back home and watched it, and it was so beautiful to just
so good watch. I love Hugo, and I am looking forward to using it as a puzzle piece on Empire of Light and on the Fablemans later this year. Definitely looking forward to my rewatch. I haven't watched it in a few years, but great piece. I hadn't thought of that at all, but I mean, when you're talking about that love of whether it's storytelling in general, you know, and where that can take you, and then just kind of playing with it, just playing with the form like this. We said it's a step away from spoof, but it is like kind of a little slapsticky. It's kind of playing with it. And I think that's a great one. Hugo's awesome. You guys big Hugo fans over there?
No.
Never watched it.
You never seen Hugo?
No.
I recommend you guys watch it.
In my mind, I can't even think like, it's animated, right?
No.
It's a
kid, it's a clock tower. It's very inspired by.
It's a live action movie?
It's live action. Scorsese's love HBO of Max. Movies, basically.
I think it's so shiny and glossy that sometimes you can confuse it for being
animated.
Yeah, I can see that.
Oh, I'm thinking of the Steven Spielberg with the tin, Rin Tin.
Okay.
That one? I don't know why that seems like Hugo to me.
Scorsese probably loves that movie.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I would think so. I've actually never seen that movie. Rahul, let's go to your next one.
Sure. My next one, listen, I'm surprised nobody has said it because it's so blatantly obvious.
Mm.
And that is Dora and the Lost City of Gold.
Ooh.
As I'm watching, first, 100% serious.
Okay.
As I'm watching this movie, I am completely enamored, first off, by our female lead who is out of her element. So out of touch with the world around her, so out of touch with other characters. She doesn't read people properly. She jumps to like conclusions because she's just not aware of this world that she has been thrust into. She is unaware of how funny she is. And she is so funny.
Yeah.
She is adorable. And she makes the entire movie. Saoirse Ronan steals the show in this film.
Yeah.
She is so endearing, so funny. And her comedic timing, much like Dora's, is on point. She is fantastic. I was completely drawn by her this entire film as I watched was in Dora, one of the best films of 2019. And I stand by that. If you haven't seen it, Dora and the Lost, it's so good.
I love that Dora movie. I thought it was so much fun. I'm with you. I'm absolutely with you. And yeah, Saoirse Ronan, I mean, we never get to see her do stuff like this, you know, and she just absolutely kills it. She's so funny in it and like just effortless at being like, yeah, like she's just out of her element the entire time and never gets a chance to really kind of like catch up to anything that's going on. But she's just so great at doing that. It's like it's a perfect comedic performance.
And it's also one of those things that like, much like Dora, the audience loves her, but the characters in the world are like kind of annoyed by her.
Yeah, sure.
Because they're just like, I don't understand how you exist in this world that we, the rest of us, exist in. How are we in the same universe? And that's how she feels in this. And yeah, I love it.
I love that as a piece. I was kind of, for that idea of the Saoirse Ronan character, I was kind of thinking more in lines of like buddy cop or something like that, where like they get stuck, training them on the job or whatever. But let's go with Dora instead, because I mean, that movie rocks.
Good pick. It is a good movie. I agree.
Colby, what do you got next?
Oh man, I got Scream. So it's funny when you were mentioning like New Nightmare, because like Scream, while it's a genre departure with regard to like this being like a murder mystery versus like a horror, but Scream was something that was commenting on the genre. It was actually like really necessary to kind of spice things up with horror, because it kind of got stale. Like I said, you had Wes Craven kind of spin things around, even though he played such this amazing part of like what made it. Like Nightmare on Elm Street is one of my favorite horror movies of all time. And he had a heavy end, just like Agatha Christie in this instance, where she breathes life into a stage play. And then essentially from the stage play is minding that this needs to be spun off into a film. And like, she does give permission to be able to do that, but she has like these certain things that want to be met. And interesting enough, it's you have a central protagonist that is laying out in with regards to Jamie Kennedy. There we go.
There you
Jamie Kennedy, you know, just kind of like being like, our Sherpa and guide. It's the same that you have with like Adrian Brody's character, except Jamie Kennedy doesn't die. Correct. But it's just a lot of fun, and it's a big ensemble piece that like mines so much. Like, it was able to be dramatic when it needed to be, to still be able to keep up the scares while at the same time giving you the fun to be able to disarm you, so that way the horrors work. And the best part about it was the reveal in the end, where it's really, they're hoping that you stay, that you believed in everything to sell this interweaving connected story. Mm-hmm. Because what's being asked of us in this film is, do you believe Dennis? That the guy who's responsible for it all, like, does it make sense to you? And like, it actually does.
Yeah.
Like, essentially his story was co-opted and he tried to find a way to be able to like deal with it. It's the same thing with Cotton Weary, right?
Yeah.
Where essentially it's like, he could not escape the fact that not only like, you know, was this thing that happened to him, it didn't really kind of happen and stuff like that, but he couldn't get away from it. So that's why in the sequel, was like, no, now I actually have to be able to like, you know, be the guy. So it was, sorry, spoiler. So sorry for Scream 2.
The worst one.
The worst one.
I will say this, if I could come, I love your pick of A New Nightmare and Scream. Great horror films. Great murder mysteries, right? But I feel like one of the big differences between this one and that one, where you're talking about Dennis, and do we believe Dennis? Do we believe in his motive? I believe in his motive. I believe that. But the difference between your two picks and this is that the killers in those movies are central characters to the film. Whereas like in this one, Dennis is like a side player at best.
Mm.
And then at the end, I'm just like, oh, it was Dennis. The whole movie, I'm sitting here, I'm just like, it's got to be one of these main characters. It's got to be one of them. And then it's like, it's Dennis. The guy that has like six lines, all movie.
Interestingly, though, I didn't notice this the first time I watched it, but I'm pretty sure he's the first character Adrian Brody's voiceover introduces. Like, you know, it could be this schmuck or whatever, and like, we're off and running at that point, you know. So now at that point, it's all misdirection to get you to not think of it anymore. Clever,
and I think it's very successful, and at just like being smart while at the same time allowing to take some like narrative liberties. Like, there's some things that like the screenwriter and he's like, yo, we got this guy just like And it's so funny because, like, of course, this podcast is called Piece It Together, and you have a protagonist making puzzle pieces, and they don't do anything with it.
I like that. I like that.
Yes.
It's such an odd thing. Like, I'm going to drink and make puzzles.
I thought of it as like the, he's like, oh, you know, they have to have like a defect. I thought it was just like a flaw. Like, it's just like, he just has this weird hobby. Fun fact, this detective is a real human being that has weird hobbies. That's how I saw it.
Are you saying that people that like to do puzzles are weird? Is that what you're saying?
Bro, I'm just saying this. I'm saying that jigsaws blanks are not puzzles. That's what I'm saying.
Fair enough.
It's broken pictures.
Another side piece. You just put together. Go with saw and jigsaw. There we go.
Well, I'll go to my second piece, my last piece. A lot of people have joked about this is Wes Anderson does a whodunit. And I'm going to go Grand Budapest Hotel, although you could go with a lot of different Wes Anderson films. Like, all the characters are so quirky. There's so much to the staging and the sets that make them feel almost like little dioramas, the same way that Wes Anderson would do. And of course, this is set mostly on sets, so it totally makes sense and fits. But then you get in the split screens and the little camera tricks and back to the quirky characters, everybody having their little bits and pieces. Even the trailer for this movie, like, it was the first thing I thought of when I saw the trailer for this movie, the way they would they got that quirky music going and they're quick cutting from actor to actor, you know, looking directly into the camera. It's just like a Wes Anderson trailer.
Yeah.
I feel like the movie was sold in that way. This director, it's his first movie, Tom George. He's done some TV, but I have to imagine that he probably is a big Wes Anderson fan.
Okay. So you can see that major influence. And I think it's cool. Like, it's nice to be able, I can't wait to be able to get like my first, like, you know, director debut feature credit, right?
Mm-hmm.
And to have it be something like this. But it's fun. Like, I think the direction was slick. Like, it's purposely trying to incorporate the tropes of the genre, but still do enough to be able to stand on its own. And like, the fact that you can weave in the comedy with the direction as well as the editing.
Yeah.
Like, say, oh, what are you going to do next? Put it on a screen 3 weeks later?
Yeah.
3 weeks later. Yeah. And it's just like, that's like, it's cute and it works.
Yeah.
Like,
And that's a great puzzle piece too. I think a lot of the cinematography in this reminds me of Grand Budapest Hotel specifically.
Yeah.
A lot of the shots, like a lot of the panning shots, and we get to see it reminds me a lot of Budapest Hotel. Yeah.
Even the score had a lot of cues that kind of reminded me of that as well. And so, yeah, there's just a lot of layers to that. Yeah. So I know we said we're going to just do two pieces each. I have one extra piece I was going to throw in here. Listeners of the show know my favorite movie is Adaptation. And, Charlie Kaufman, the character in Adaptation, really doesn't want his movie to turn into a big Hollywood ending. And sure enough, it basically does. All the action and the sex and the drugs and the drama all come in, all the stuff that he didn't want to happen. And our writer, played by David Oyelowo, does not want basically Adrian Brody's vision of the story to play out. And that's literally like shot for shot exactly how it all plays out by the end. So I had to include Adaptation in my list here.
Sure.
How could you not? It's your favorite movie. It makes sense.
There you go. So that is our puzzle pieces for the movie. Rosa, do you have any closing thoughts? Anything we didn't quite get to while we were talking puzzle pieces?
I don't know. I also thought about, I don't know why, probably Singing in the Rain for some reason. I'm sure because of the movie, the film industry, and focusing on that. Granted, it's more focused on the transition from the silent movies to the talkies and so on and so forth. But yeah, I was also thinking about that, and I was like, but no. Anyways, I did have a good time. I was generally surprised by it.
Yeah.
Generally surprised and delighted by it.
Right on, Raul. How about you? Any closing thoughts? Anything you wanted to throw in there?
Sure. Quick ones, like the bar scene. I don't know how you can't think of The Shining.
Yeah,
like,
sure.
I was just like, oh yeah, this is The Shining. And then
without
pants on. Yeah. And then the whole element of like revealing to us the ending earlier. I'm sure many other films do this, but it made me think of a stand-up special, Hannah Gadsby special, Douglas. She literally spends 30 minutes telling us exactly what's going to happen this entire show. And then she follows it to the T, and it is still hilarious. And the ending is still hilarious. When the camera pans and you see the butler, it's still hilarious.
Yeah. So that's a balancing act to be able to like show your cards and then make it still work.
And he died not that long before the film ends. And I still forgot that this is like, it's not until the camera's passing everybody, I'm just like, what is happening? Oh, okay. And it's still hilarious. It was great.
Yeah. Right on. Toby, any closing thoughts?
Yeah, this movie, like, once again, I keep saying I got to get to my letterbox, and I don't know when I'm going to get to it so I can like actually nail down where this is going to fit at. But like, it's in my top 10, and it's in a competition with like 20 something other films. But yeah, it's been a good year. And I like the fact that movies are always, for me, a great escape. And this is something that feels so separate from our everyday world to just kind of have fun with. You don't necessarily have to take too seriously. And there are some serious elements with inside the narrative to be able to like sit on. And it's a great movie to be able to, like, anybody who has not got a chance to watch the film, go watch it. It's a lot of fun. We need more movies like this. It's just a good time. And honestly, like, one, it's got Ruth Wilson in it. And the fact that, like, if I was going to go in the TV route of another piece, it would be Luther. That London series starring Idris Elba, where essentially you have, spoiler alert, you got Ruth Wilson, who is the bad guy. And we find out halfway through the series that she is, but it's how our DCI Luther contends with the fact that, like, he's in love with this bad guy. Mm. So it's really cool. And if anybody gets a chance, watch Luther. It's a mini series. They come out like 2.5 years apart. They're hoping to turn it into a movie. And yeah, so it's a lot of fun. Watch it, listen to this podcast. And
Right on. Well, my only thoughts that I wanted to like kind of just throw out there, and you were kind of just touching on it there about we need more movies like this. These are exactly the kind of movies I feel like we're all always saying we need, like these studio comedies or adult movies, like movies that we just don't see anymore, between whether it's superhero movies, horror movies, like the things that kind of just dominate theaters right now and streaming. And like I said, Confess Fletch last week, that movie is great and fits purely in this mold as well. These are them, so people should see them, because that's what we all like say that we want all the time. And I think this is a perfect example of that. Only other like little mini piece I was going to throw in there, I had mentioned about Buddy Cops. I was thinking of The Other Guys as another movie that kind of just plays with knowing the genre so well and just playing with your expectations of that. And so, but also being a good example of that genre. So that's the only other extra one I had there. So yeah, that does it for See How They Run. Rosa, tell people about the podcast and what you got going on.
Oh yes. Find me on any social media platform at Rosa's Reviews. And yeah, you can also follow the podcast Latinx Lens on every social media platform, every podcasting platform, or you can just visit our website, latinxlens.com.
Awesome. Raul, tell people where they can find you.
Yeah. You can find us at, at The Raul Nevado on Twitter and Instagram. And the podcast is Minorities Report Film. And reportpod.com is the website. And our handles are mreportpod, at mreport.
Colby, where can they find you?
Yeah, you can follow your boy on Twitter and IG at Colby Told Me. That's KOLBYTOLDME. When they ask you where you heard it from, you can tell them Colby told me.
And he's also at Minorities Report.
Correct.
And that too. Absolutely. Well, I always end these things asking for a recommendation of something you watched recently. Rosa, is there something you watched recently you'd like to recommend to our listeners and the people here?
Oh my God. Have they ever done like a recommend not to watch something? I just,
you know what? Go for it. If that's what you want to do, just hate on something right now.
No, not hate on it, but probably not recommend it as much. Actually, you know what? No, yes, I have something to recommend. It's getting a lot of hate, so I'm going to be here to support it. I actually watched Don't Worry, Darling. Okay. And I had a good time with it, surprisingly. And I think it's getting a lot of unnecessary hate. So yeah, go check out Don't Worry, Darling, because I did have a good time with it. I watched Morbius, and I think that's where I was heading to with Don't Seek It.
Yeah, Don't Worry, Darling. I'm looking forward to watching it this weekend. Actually, we were between that and this movie for tonight's podcast. So those were going to be the two options, but I went with this. So I'm looking forward to seeing it. So great recommendation. Raul, is there something you watched recently?
Listen, the best movie of the year for me is still Cha-Cha Real Smooth.
Okay.
On Apple TV Plus. If you haven't seen it, you need to watch it. And then also getting a lot of hate, unnecessarily, mainly because people don't like to see great representation on TV. and that is The Lord of the Rings, The Rings of Power. It's a great show. Beautiful, great performances, really well written, and it is exceptional. And Amazon has spent so much money on this show, and I want them to keep making it. Lord of the Rings, Rings of Power on Amazon. Watch it.
Absolutely.
Love if you want to keep riding the representation train, you should watch the number one movie in America right now, The Woman King, starring Viola Davis.
Really good.
Thusu Mbedu.
Lashana Lynch.
Yeah, Lashana Lynch. It is a fantastic movie. Like, when anyone says, Agoje, you say, Husu. And just be filled with pride. It's a fun film. It is a great and powerful story that I'm glad is being told. And just put some dynamic and powerful women on the screen. And yeah, it's one of the 20-something films in my top 10. It's in my top 10.
Some people call that top 30.
Nah, top 10 sounds better. Nah,
sounds good.
Yeah, top 30 of the top 10. You know?
Well, we're going to see The Woman King on Sunday. I can't wait. I'm so looking forward to it. So,
it's a pack. It's packed. On Sunday, it's going to be busy. I'm going to rewatch. We're doing a retrospective on James Cameron. So we're watching Adobe 3D
Of
Avatar.
So,
yeah.
So excited.
Oh, yeah. Well, guys, thank you so much for doing this. Everybody, please check out their podcast as well. And thank you to the Look, Dine, and Cinema for having us. Thank you to Cinema Week for putting this together. And thank you to all of you for sticking around and listening to us talk about the movie. I'm Josh Bell.
And I'm Jason Harrison. We co-host a podcast called Awesome Movie Year.
Each season, we take a look back at an awesome year for movies, which is every year.
We deep dive into these specific years and we pick out why they were such great years for films. We go over the biggest hits, the biggest flops, the best picture, some personal picks, some cult classics.
Years we've covered in past seasons include 1994, 2003, 1977, and 1984, and we've got all of film history to look forward to. So check us out at awesomemovieyear.com or wherever you listen to podcasts. All right, so I hope you enjoyed that conversation about See How They Run. Again, thank you to the Look, Dine, and Cinema. Thank you to Cinema Week, which, by the way, is coming up on October 7th through 13th. So make sure to go out to the theater and take part in everything they've got going on. And thank you to my guests, Rosa Parra, Roland Nevado, and Colby Mack. I always look forward to getting these people on my show, and hopefully we'll get them back on again sometime soon. Make sure you check out their podcast as well, Latinx Lens and Minorities Report. Great shows. Lots of great content to go check out. So if you're enjoying the podcast, of course, make sure you're subscribed. If you really enjoy the podcast, maybe drop us a 5-star rating. We'd really appreciate that over on Apple Podcasts or Good Pods, wherever it is you're listening and wherever it is you're subscribed. You could also follow us on social media at Piecing Pod. Join our Facebook group, Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces. And last but not least, don't forget we do have a Patreon, the Produced by David Rosen Patreon, where I post bonus and advanced content from Piecing It Together. We currently have episodes on Bullet Train, 3,000 Years of Longing, a couple other advanced episodes over there to check out. There's also exclusive content from Awesome Movie Year, another movie podcast I produce, and from my music career. I'm actually finishing up a new album right now, and so I post sneak peeks of the album, and I will actually have like a whole album that will be exclusive to the Patreon coming out later this year, so it might be early into next year, but lots of stuff on the way. So check it out. It's patreon.com/bydavidrosen, the Produced by David Rosen Patreon. If you want to support the show that way, I appreciate it. So that does it for today's episode. Let's close this out with a piece of music, as I always do. And you know what? Why not? Let's play a track from the new album. Let's preview the new album. This has never been heard before. It's a song off my new album coming out at the end of this year called More Content, and this song is called Trapped in the Beat. Hope you enjoy it. This album, I've been spending all my time that I'm not spending on the podcast, I'm spending on the album. I'm always doing something, I guess, but yeah, it's just nonstop work, but this album's coming out so good. I'm so excited to share it with everybody. So this is a song off that album. Hope you enjoy it. We'll be back with more Piecing It Together real soon.
an All Points West production, produced by David Rosen in Las Vegas.